You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
And now a word from our sponsor, SpyCloud, the leader in operationalizing cybercrime analytics. Traditional threat intelligence is a thing of the past. Cyber criminals are stealing vast amounts of credentials, session cookies, and financial data every day, and it's hard to keep up. SpyCloud is the trusted partner businesses turn to fully understand their darknet exposure risk and neutralize threats before it's too late. SpyCloud alerts your organization as soon as an employee or customer's data appears on the darknet, so you can act faster than bad actors to prevent cyber attacks like ransomware, session hijacking, account takeover, and online fraud. With insights from the industry's largest repository of recaptured data, protect the digital identities and systems most important to your business. Get your free corporate darknet exposure report at spycloud.com/cyberwire and see what information criminals have in their hands today. That's spycloud.com/cyberwire. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CyberWire's Research Saturday. I'm Dave Bittner, and this is our weekly conversation with researchers and analysts tracking down threats and vulnerabilities and solving some of the hard problems of protecting ourselves in a rapidly evolving cyberspace. Thanks for joining us. And now, a word from our sponsor, Sixsense. Sixsense provides award-winning cloud-based automated endpoint and vulnerability management solutions to streamline IT and security operations. With its advanced platform, businesses gain complete visibility and control over their infrastructure, reducing IT and security risks and optimizing operational efficiency. With Sixsense, you'll get real-time alerts, risk-based vulnerability prioritization and remediations, and an intuitive automation and orchestration engine so you can focus on your core business goals, confident in the knowledge that your enterprise is secure, compliant, and running smoothly. To learn why enterprises choose Sixsense, visit sixsense.com.
There's a variety of ways that this can happen. What it boils down to basically is code injection.
That's Marcelle Lee. She's a threat researcher at Looking Glass, and today she's discussing her recently published research, Cryptojacking, Coming to a Server Near You.
Code injection has been around for a long time. It's nothing new. And there's many different ways to leverage it. But basically, attackers are just able to inject code onto different websites. And it's because there's some vulnerability in that website. It's one of the most common of the OWASP top 10 list. I think it used to be number one. I'm not sure if it's still number one. But yeah, injection is not a new thing by any stretch.
So when we're talking code, or we're talking JavaScript code here?
Well, in the case of the CoinHive miner, that one is written in JavaScript. So it depends. I mean, you can write code in anything, right? But the CoinHive miner that seems to be the most popular one right now is based on JavaScript.
So let's just back up a little bit and just give us a definition here. What are we talking about when we say cryptojacking?
So cryptojacking, my definition of it is the illegitimate mining of cryptocurrency, and it can be done a lot of different ways, through a browser, through a mobile app, lots of things. And I say illegitimate because you can certainly have coin mining activity on your website. Like, you could run it on CyberWire's website if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. And just have it as a way to make money. And some people even say, oh, well, you know, we're doing that instead of ads. So that's just how we're making our extra dollars. So to me, that's sort of the difference between legitimate and illegitimate. But even if you're running it, like, intentionally on your website, in my opinion, like, ethically speaking, you should still have like an opt-in, opt-out thing for your site visitors, which I have seen on some sites, just where you can say, sure, I don't mind mining some cryptocurrency for you.
Yeah, I remember, you know, years ago, and I think it's still active, there was the SETI project, analyzing radio signals from space to try to find intelligent life, and they would, you'd give them permission to use your, you know, extra processor cycles at night, and everyone was okay with that. It was a little different than what we've got today.
A little bit. Yeah. If I had had a charity that, well, I have a lot of charities that I like, but, you know, say I have a charity that I like and they're doing cryptocurrency mining, then I might be like, okay, sure, I'll just let you mine all night long while I'm sleeping and it's not impacting, you know, my use of the computer. But I haven't seen a lot of that, unfortunately.
And then I guess that is the point, though, that you are using people's computer resources, which involve you're using electricity, you're using, I suppose there could be wear and tear on the machine by having it run, you know, full capacity. And these folks generally aren't asking for permission ahead of time.
Correct. And it really does make a huge impact on just your CPU usage and all that sort of thing. Like in the testing that I did, my CPU usage went up 500%, like pretty much instantly. And that's is a fairly steady and sustained increase. It doesn't drop off until you stop the mining activity. So that can be impactful. And the research I've seen on mobile apps, although I haven't tested it on a mobile device myself, just shows, you know, generally it's going to impact those devices even more from the wear and tear standpoint.
Yeah, I get the heat, and also it would really drain your battery quickly, I suspect.
Exactly. Like the first testing I did actually was on a laptop, and the laptop, I mean, you can hear the engines or the fans spin up right away. Not the engines, the fans. And the laptop got so hot so fast that, like, it was literally burning my legs.
Wow.
I was like, oh, I need to do this at a table or something. It's pretty significant, the impact.
Yeah. So let's run through some of the things you discovered, some of the various flavors, I suppose, of cryptojacking. And one of the things that you point out in your research is that this isn't just happening in your browser. You found it in some Oracle WebLogic application servers?
Yep, that's correct. And that's been fairly widely reported on now. And that was basically leveraging an input validation vulnerability. So again, it's just another injection type thing. That was earlier this year, I think that came out. And then since then, like more recently, not even in my research, was the Tesla's cloud, which is a Amazon S3 bucket, not too terribly surprisingly, that one was impacted as well. So mining and also some data loss there, data leakage. There's been some government sites that have been hit recently in UK, the National Health Service.
Right.
And also in Australia, they're I forget which government agency, but they've experienced it too. But I mean, it's pretty common to see cyber attackers or criminals or however you want to refer to it, to just basically look for vulnerable sites. And often it doesn't even matter what that site is. But in this case, you know, they're going to want sites with maximum traffic just to increase that potential for making some income off of the mining.
Yeah, it was interesting in that UK example because it was really a third-party provider. I believe it was an accessibility plugin for the websites. And so the folks who were the original hosts of those sites, you know, were doing all the right things, but it was this third party who got attacked.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's through like apps and just sort of those side things that are running on a website sometimes that where that's coming in. I've seen it in also social media, like Digimine was getting spread around on social media, and that would basically infect your Facebook account and then spread to your Facebook friends and so on and so forth. So it's interesting because these miners are often part of like another whole kit of things. So it might be mining, it might be stealing passwords, it might be doing all different kinds of things at one time. And what we're seeing is that whereas ransomware, well, I don't want to say ransomware is on the decline because something terrible will like happen tomorrow.
But, don't tempt fate.
I know, right? But cryptojacking seems to be definitely on the uptick. Like the Rig exploit kit, which is traditionally kind of known for ransomware, is now gearing up to do more of the cryptojacking thing. So it's interesting. I think it's probably a lot less effort to do cryptojacking than it is to do ransomware, just because you don't have to go through the whole rigmarole of collecting ransom and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I guess there's less infrastructure, there less things you have to support with it, having to get the money and and so on and so forth. That also, one of the things that that leaves me scratching my head about cryptojacking, you know, like in your example of having, you know, botnets, for example, doing mining for cryptocurrency, I can imagine a video camera, you know, mounted on a wall in a warehouse somewhere, and someone takes advantage of that camera to do some crypto mining. And as long as that camera still functions as a camera, no one's going to notice.
Right.
And so it could just go about, you know, I suppose it would use more electricity. And as we said, it could run hotter and maybe reduce the life of the device and so on. But it's not really affecting someone in the way that ransomware is. One of the things that that leaves me scratching my head is, why don't these crypto miners, why do they go full out and try to grab all of your processing capability? Why don't they dial it in and say, all right, we're only going to use 25%, because if we only use 25% or 50% or whatever, it's much more likely that we won't be noticed.
Right, exactly. And that's a good question. And I think the answer is maybe just not that much thought was put into some of these miners. But I've definitely seen, like, in our testing, just looking at, you know, the traffic, there are settings that you can put in there for, like, throttling the speed or, detecting whether it's a mobile device or not a mobile device, things like that. So, I mean, they are pretty customizable. It's just, you know, a lot of times people use stuff right out of the box, right?
Right.
So to speak. But there's definitely customization and optimization options.
Well, and I suppose, too, that it's possible that they are using those options, and those are the ones that aren't being discovered because they're not drawing attention to themselves.
When I initially did my testing, I found over 7,000 sites that were running CoinHive miners, which is a lot. And just this morning, for grins and giggles, I searched again, not specifically for CoinHive, but just for any miner activity. And do you want to take a guess at how many sites I found today?
So you found 7,000 before.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. let's go crazy. Let's double it and say 14.
Okay. It's actually 40,000 sites that have some sort of mining activity. And there might be a few outliers that aren't really doing that. Maybe it's just a site that's talking about doing it or whatever. Mm-hmm. But
now, when you say you search, what does that entail? How do you do that?
Oh, right. So it's nothing magical. There's actually a pretty awesome website that I use for this kind of research called publicwww.com. And it allows you to basically search source code in websites. So it's a pretty awesome tool.
Yeah.
I just put in a little code snippet from that would be actually generic to really any miner. Yep. Over 40,000.
Wow. So in addition to running in browsers, we're seeing apps show up on the Google Play Store that are miners as well.
Yes, yes. In fact, the one that I saw was actually like a wallpaper app. And I always tell people, like, there's always malicious apps, right? And typically, it seems to be flashlight apps are notoriously bad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if there's any flashlight miners out there, but I bet there probably are. And then, yeah, like I said, this wallpaper one. So, you know, you just want some pretty pictures for your background or whatever, and you get some mining along with it. So that's, you know, what I would consider like a Trojanized app, because certainly you're not signing up to mine most likely when you downloaded that app.
So tell me about some of the things you discovered where people were hijacking Wi-Fi hotspots.
That was a really interesting thing. And I've actually only seen the one example of it that happened, I think, in Buenos Aires. The attackers were using a tool called Coffee Miner, which is a man-in-the-middle tool. And it basically hijacks when the patrons, in this case, a Starbucks, when the patrons try to connect to the Wi-Fi hotspot, it injects this code. And then basically everything that they do that's, you know, on HTML sites is running the code. So again, I've only seen the one example reported of that, but the Coffee Miner tool is definitely out there.
Yeah. And take us through what you discovered with the Zealot malware campaign.
Oh, so Zealot is another one that's sort of a multi-featured campaign. And another company did a lot of research on that, actually. But it did a number of things besides the mining. And it also leveraged the Eternal Blue, Eternal Synergy exploits, and basically used that and targeted Windows and Linux systems, and could basically just send up requests via HTTP on these infected servers. But it did other things, like I think that one was also extracting credentials and doing some propagation within the network. So that one I didn't actually study myself. I just read about it. But
yeah, so it's sort of in the bag of malware tricks. Cryptojacking is one of the things, I guess, one of the common things in these multi-talented kits. Cryptojacking is becoming a standard tool.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's what I was saying before, like with the exploit kits or like remote access tools that have sort of a variety of features, if you will. Cryptocurrency mining, I mean, just appears to be like another thing that's getting thrown into the mix.
Right. And so what exactly are you finding, just statistically? How bad is this? Is it, if a crypto miner is running on my computer, am I likely to notice?
Yeah, you are likely to notice, because like I was saying before, with my own testing, the fans will fire up pretty quickly, and you'll, if you're happening to be paying attention to your CPU, you will see a sharp spike in that. It's noticeable, but then again, you know, it's noticeable if you're maybe looking for it. If you're not aware or just not paying that much attention to it, then you might not notice. Or I would say the average person probably isn't going to have the slightest idea that it's mining activity, right? They might just think, oh, I'm streaming a video and it's taking a lot of energy or whatever.
Time to buy a new computer, might.
Something like that.
But so if you do notice that, what should you do?
There's a couple of different things you can do. What I personally do is use a browser extension that blocks mining activity. And there's quite a few of those out there. And they're available. Like, I've seen them for Chrome, Firefox, Microsoft Edge. I think Opera just came out with one as well. Hmm. So it's just something you install in your browser that detects and blocks the activity, which is interesting because then you get to see which sites, of course, because it'll pop up and say blocking the activity. Also, antivirus might pick it up. That's kind of iffy because there's just so many variables, but I have seen a couple of different antivirus engines that detected some of this activity. And again, it kind of just depends on the vector.
What about how they're serving this up through ad networks? Are the folks who are running the ad networks, are they being complicit in this?
Well, I can't say whether they're being complicit or not, but I mean, they certainly could be, or they might also just be victims as well, like the thing we were talking about with the UK sites. You can inject stuff almost everywhere, right? It just depends on the level of security and how well that code is written. And again, you know, it's not necessarily done maliciously. It might just be to make money. One site like Pirate Bay, I think most notoriously, was serving up the cryptocurrency mining without their users' permission. And it was discovered, but they were like, well, I don't care. So, right. You know, they just carried on doing it. And so, you know, then it becomes one of those things from the user. It's like, well, do I still want to go to Pirate Bay and take that cryptocurrency mining along with it? Maybe I do, maybe I don't. You know, it's kind of a decision that you make. But like I said, most sites, you're not going to see it or know it.
I think it's interesting, too, because we saw, I can't remember the site, but like as you mentioned earlier, there was a site that said, you know, if you're running ad blocker, we're going to run cryptocurrency mining in the background. Mm-hmm. Are you okay with this? I guess the question I have for you is, well, if I don't want to see ads, should I be okay with the crypto mining? Is it necessarily a deal killer?
Well, I don't really like to see ads or do cryptocurrency.
Well,
mining.
You're right. Exactly. Yeah, it's true. It's sort of a.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have a mining blocker and I also have ad blockers. So, you know, some sites.
I guess if you're sympathetic to the fact that that these folks are a business and are trying to make, you know, desperately trying to make money on the web, which is getting harder and harder to do. I guess, should we have any sympathy for them trying to go at it this way?
So I would say it depends. Like for me, it would totally depend on the website, right? There's different news outlets that, you know, they'll say, oh, we see you're using an ad blocker. Would you please unblock? Because this is how we make our money. I think like The Guardian does that. For them, I might, you know, allow those ads. And probably the same thing with the mining. I mean, chances are I'm not going to be on any one website that long that it's really going to make any kind of significant impact. Where you see more of an impact is, you know, say you're streaming media or something and you're mining at the same time. That's going to make a big difference. And in fact, even the CoinHive website talks about, you know, in order to optimize your returns on this, it makes sense to inject it into sites where there's going to be sort of that prolonged connection and communication with the user.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
And is this the sort of thing, like speaking about CoinHive, if I decided that I wanted to be someone who profits from, you know, mining on other people's machines, are these things available as a service? Is this a relatively easy thing for someone to spin up and do?
Yes, actually. So plenty of code out there, but I mean, I've seen even like WordPress plugins where you, if you want to add this functionality to your WordPress site or to somebody's WordPress site, there's lots and lots of what I would consider pretty much legit things, you know, because like many things in this field, like CoinHive, they've pretty much said, hey, we built this not ever thinking that it was going to be used maliciously, but, you know, that train has obviously left the station. So, and it's the same with all the other ones too, you know? So I'm sure whoever wrote the WordPress plugins is probably like, oh, this is a cool thing. And then it gets reappropriated.
Yeah. Unintended consequences.
Yes. The cryptocurrency that I'm seeing mostly, which is Monero. And as you know, most people, when they think of cryptocurrency, they think Bitcoin. It's like synonymous in their minds, but there's many, many different cryptocurrencies. And Monero is kind of interesting because it's based on the CryptoNote cryptocurrency protocol. And it's very different from Bitcoin in that the wallets are completely private. So whereas with Bitcoin, you can look up a wallet address and see all the transactions. You can't do that with Monero. It's just completely different algorithm. So we're definitely seeing a sort of an increase of usage with cyber criminal activity because of that. And I would say that personally to me, I've seen where Monero has really spiked in, or jumped up in value over the past few months. CoinHive came out, I think, around September of last year. And since then, Monero has gone from like 100 something to it's like at 300 today. So it's gone up quite a bit. It might be a good investment. I don't know.
Right. You're not technically a financial advisor, so listeners should not take financial advice. Right. So it's the coin of choice because it provides that anonymity that Bitcoin does not.
Exactly.
Our thanks to Marcel Lee for joining us. You can read her complete report, Cryptojacking, coming soon to a server near you. On the Looking Glass website, it's in their blog section.
Don't struggle to align your organization's cybersecurity with business risk. Get the only solution that goes beyond reacting to threats with vulnerability and risk monitoring. You need the next evolution of MDR. And only Critical Start delivers it. Critical Start doesn't just monitor and respond to threats. They put you in control by detecting suspicious activities, quickly responding to contain threats, and identifying your most critical assets and protecting them against vulnerabilities and exposures. With continuous visibility, expert guidance, and measurable risk reduction, Critical Start has redefined what it means to manage cyber risk. Demonstrate provable security maturity to your leadership while positioning your program to achieve the greatest risk reduction per dollar spent. Stop fearing risk and start managing it with Critical Start. Visit CriticalStart.com and request a demo today. That's CriticalStart.com. The CyberWire Research Saturday is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of DataTribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening.